Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Tonight it's Sunday night, and it's Jane Hoffman. I'm texting John the call-in number in case he forgot. 323-642-1691. He's my co-host. Anyway, you know, I've known Lionel Rolfe since 1999. That's going on, I believe, 15 years. And, John, I'll bring you into the show in a second. So I've known Lionel Rolfe for 14 years. John, you're on the air, but I wanted to explain something to the audience. So could you please hold a sec?
Absolutely.
Okay, you know, I sent you this article called The Most Unpleasant Apparition in the Desert, and I thought it was more about the unraveling of the Louisiana attorney James Garrison, who tried Clay Shaw for what was believed his involvement in the conspiracy to kill JFK. But there was a guy named Colonel William P. Gale who served in the military for over 20 to 30 years, and he was the youngest lieutenant that ever went from like private to lieutenant. And later on in the article, Lionel hurls a strong accusation. He had interviewed William Gale the night before RFK was murdered, and he believes that this William P. Gale, who was a retired lieutenant from the military, may have been the second shot on RFK from the rear. So that's a powerful message to send over the Huffington Post, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, Janessa Impressa. It was quite a, it's certainly a challenging issue for the country, because people, there's a certain innocence. And I have to say, in the country, when JFK was president, there was a lot of hope. And it seemed like that faith and simplicity in hope, in change, in America, in just the whole spirit of it all was, you know, executed that day. And then kind of with his brother, Bobby, that kind of renewed, and everyone had that energy again, that young spirit of let's take on the world. And that got, you know, just obliterated again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and you're right. I think the reason why JFK's assassination is still a central topic, and it recently sprung up because it had been exactly 50 years since he was killed in November 26, 2013. I think it's because it was when innocence ended in America, and the writing was on the wall that there are sub-terror groups out there that hated the Kennedys, hated Catholicism, and wanted to maintain control in a violent way. So for that was a hard pill to swallow for people who just had this blind belief in leadership.
Right. And it kind of, you know, they call it the end of the age of innocence. It's a process where when you grow up and you suddenly realize there's no Santa Claus, or that certain things that you believed, you know, babies don't come from a stork. When people, as you get older, start to tell you to question authority, because up until that time, the government said, hey, this is what happened with JFK, and these are the facts as we see them, and just accept it and drink the Kool-Aid. And people started questioning, like, oh, wait a second here, you know, like, we don't like that we are going to Vietnam. You know, maybe the first couple of years, well, who knows, we're fighting communism. But then after a couple of years, oh, wait a second, the people that were trying to get us out are getting eliminated, and the people that want to encourage us are telling us just drink the Kool-Aid. I think with Bobby, it was maybe more the thing about it. I was about,
you're a couple years older than me. I was 8 when he died.
Yeah, I was 59, so I was about, you know, over that kind of 8-9 year range, and literally, I stayed up that night. I didn't I was kind of not an insomniac, but maybe I was. I would go to bed, you know, at 10 or whenever my folks would say, but then I'd kind of wake up around 11 or 12 and, you know, walk around the house and just, I had a hard time sleeping. And I, primaries were on that night. I was watching it, and then around, I don't know, somewhere between 11 and 11:30, they started giving the reports how he'd been assassinated. So I was one of the first major... I stayed up till 3 or 4 in the morning just watching the TV, just like amazed, because my folks were asleep. And I thought, just I'm the only one in the household that knows. It was kind of
that
the
was
one of
back
those...
in the day of, that was back before mass media, like they only had
right.
the 10 o'clock news on at night, and usually it was only a half hour long, but I'm sure they extended it that night.
And if you missed it, that was it. And then sometime around 2 or 3 in the morning, you'd get those, you know, those signals on the TV screen, looked like kind of like air traffic control with the tone, you know, the boo kind of tone
right.
going on. And literally, the only thing about the Robert Kennedy thing, though, is I think I would lean more towards lone shooter on that. JFK multiple by just by crime scene. The problem you have is when you've got people jumping and pushing and gun angles and, you know, one split degree of an angle can change the whole trajectory of everything. So it's really hard to pinpoint it, but they have pulled bullets and there are some it's something's fishy and, you know, something's
can
rotten.
I read, may I read two paragraphs about this article Lionel wrote, because what happened was is he went to go interview him in the desert. Then he brings up the fact that Sirhan shot him from the front. So I'm just going to read two quick paragraphs, and then because the reason I like this story is not so much whether it's true or false or just one man's perspective, but it brings out an aura of doubt that creates another mystery. So Lionel writes, I used to argue with a friend of mine, Bart Everett, an editor of the LA Times, about whether Robert Kennedy had been the victim of a lone assassin. Bart and his paper believed that. I felt that Noguchi and Ward, they were the county coroners, were onto something when they suggested that Kennedy was not killed by bullets coming from Sirhan's gun, but rather by the bullets of someone else who shot Kennedy from the rear. Bart remained convinced by the party line, which maintained that Robert Kennedy was killed by a lone assassin. Then I just want to read one more little part. So, anyways, he had interviewed him in his house, you know, this weird guy, William P. Gale. So Gale had showed me his shiny new Land Rover, which in a few hours he was going to drive to the Midwest to visit relatives. Because Lionel lived in the Newhall area, and he worked for the Newhall Signal. So that's not the part I wanted to read, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was talking about how he was brandishing his gun during the interview and talking about, you know, why JFK died and how he didn't like his name affiliated with that. And then later on, Lionel found out that he was associated with a guy named G. Clinton Wheat, who supposedly owned a house near Lafayette and MacArthur Park, and that's where they had discussed a conspiracy to kill Kennedy before 1963. So, I don't know. It just seems like this article, if I didn't know the writer really well, Lionel, you know, I'd think, yeah, it was a little shady, but since he was a reporter who actually interviewed William Gale, then to me it seems, you know, there is, he planted doubt in my head that, you know, there's more to the story than there could be.
Yes. And
did you actually read the whole article?
I did, and it was rather interesting. It also seems to, like, kind of these character type of people, kind of, they're pretty mysterious, they're pretty shady, they're pretty, you know, they're like a loose cannon, and so... It even lends more into more conspiracy, because these people are like off their rockers. You just don't know what.
Yeah,
is.
Like he said that he remember when Gale said that Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy were part of the Jewish communist conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
and then He said as he talked, he was fondling a gun with a mammoth-sized silencer. And then he said he slipped out before sundown because he was Jewish. So my friend Lionel Rolfe is Jewish. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of... So, I do think... And then, well, I didn't like the ref... I guess he was an extreme Christian, too, that started some kind of group in Idaho. So I guess... I don't know. I think there are a certain set of Americans who felt like only white Christians could be the leaders of the country, not anyone who had empathy for the poor and the minorities back in that time.
Yes. What is interesting about the shot, I mean, there is some controversy with the way the burn marks were, that he was shot from behind instead of from the front. So it's very interesting. Rosie Greer was there. You know, maybe we should probably get Rosie on the line. He could, if anything, tell us what O.J. did.
At the RFK one?
Yes, he was the one who, one of the two couple people that pulled Sirhan. When you know, basically, I think it was a group of people.
The biggest difference between JFK and RFK is RFK was at close range. Like, you know, I don't know, I'm sure they interviewed all those people who were within 10 yards of them, wouldn't you imagine?
Yes, and it's one of those, I mean, isn't it amazing? You could, in both cases, you can shoot someone in broad daylight in front of a whole bunch of, well, JFK was broad daylight. This one was, you know, in a lit building, not outdoors in the night. And a whole bunch of people, and still wonder, like, where did shots come from? Who shot it? You know, it just amazes me. And if you do have multiple people and things are orchestrated, it shows you can pull off just about anything. You really can. Because noise and travel, I mean, I've had phones. You ever lose a phone in your house and it rings and you're trying
all
to find your cell phone? And you're looking, you know, up and then it's below. You look below, it's to the side. You know, sound is so directionally deceiving. So you just never know.
Well, yeah. Well, you think that, let's just say there was like three campaign staff closely around RFK. Sirhan, I can't even, you know, this is pretty lame, but I don't even know if he ever admitted it. But the fact of the matter is that somebody had to see something. But you know how you were mentioning Rosie Greer was at the RFK, you know, assassination?
Right.
Well, I was looking through a July 26, 1976 Newsweek, and guess who was at a big party for Jimmy Carter and Walter Mondale in the summer of 76?
Jane Hoffman and Rosie Greer.
No, Don King and Reuben Carter. And they were standing between Leslie Uggams, and she has her tits hanging out. I shouldn't say it like that. But I guess some sports figures like to go to those types of things.
Yes. The marriage between entertainment, sports, and politics is incredible, actually. You know, it's like if you want to get into the White House, win a, you know, a World Series, win a basketball championship. And
well, look at Obama. He hangs out around NBA people.
Yes. He, you know, and it's the limelight. I mean, power attracts that, and power attracts power and entertainment, and that's what makes it all go around. It's a lot of it's a whole wheel that once you get in it, you know, it's you're in or you're out. And I think what's interesting.
I know I was getting off topic, but I just wanted to mention that. And there was also a picture of Warren Beatty shaking Bella Azbug's hand. She was a famous congresswoman from New York.
Isn't that crazy? Just how, you know, celebrities can get so close to the and I mean, you saw that with Clinton. You saw that, like, the minute he went on Arsenio Hall and was playing a saxophone, he was the cool dude. And you look at Obama, you look at his endorsements. They're all like rappers, singers, pop stars, and so forth. And then on the other side, you'd get like, you know, one person, you know, maybe a country western singer or, you know, Clint Eastwood. And so the country nowadays, we gravitate towards who's hip and towards who plays out well on camera. And it's been that way the last 30 or 40 years. It's become more and more just a, like a MTV video candidate is what we're looking for. We're not looking for the smartest, brightest guy.
Well, the pivotal year for MTV, Rock the Vote, was the first Clinton-Gore election. They made that provident that
yes.
Clinton and Gore used the MTV mantra to gain the youth vote. And even even though Bush wasn't that hip, Bush Jr., he still tried to get... I think even Bush Sr. went on MTV himself. You know, they all tried.
Right, and sometimes it translates or not. But, you know, it kind of, not to overly segue, but in a way, you know, it's like we're talking about, you know, discrimination, you know, the Donald Sterling thing with, you know, racism and this and that. You know, there's all kinds of discrimination that we don't even deal with that's even bigger than the NBA situation. That is like, what about fat people? When's the last time we had a really fat, dorky-looking president? You think about it. Now, you look at some of these old presidents, like, you know, 200 years.
He probably lost his chance.
You know, like 200 years ago, you look at some of the, you know, these guys, you know, with the beard, balding hair, or, you know, just overweight. But back then, they didn't have the TV. They didn't have the media. You just might maybe read a speech, maybe have a drawing of a guy, an occasional picture, but it wasn't a media thing. Nowadays, 24/7, you know, how does the guy look in a suit? How smooth is he telling jokes with reporters?
Let's segue that back into assassinations. Look at JFK and RFK. They were both fairly good-looking men. I couldn't say that for Lincoln. He was interesting-looking, but not that attractive.
Right.
So why... This is a really heavy question, but why has Obama, except for that one crazy guy in, I think it was Oregon, who had gone to Washington, D.C. to try to shoot at one of the top windows of the White House? I mean, Obama hasn't had that many assassination attempts. So maybe the mystery of JFK is still wrapped up in that, because I don't want to put it like this, but maybe... There hasn't been any president since JFK worthy enough to die.
Well, you know, I think the biggest reason right now is because the whole country would be is totally afraid. Any assassin is afraid of Joe Biden running the country. So, of course. It was kind of like, what was that? The guy.
You're thinking of the guy from Indiana who couldn't spell potato.
Right. It's like job security. And, you know, and I have to say, you know, I kind of lean more to the right, but even I was afraid. Was it Dan Quayle?
Dan Quayle. It came to my head right before you said it.
You know, I have to say, you know, there was a certain part of me that was like, please, please, don't, you know, please don't let anything happen to the president.
I think the world is really a much different place nowadays. Like, especially since the advent of Homeland Security, like the possibility of assassination would be pretty, it's always possible, but I'm sure there's a lot more protection nowadays of the president.
You know, it
especially
is.
Especially since 9/11.
But I think the cost of it, to tell you the truth, to me, it's just too high. I think, and by that I mean, how many thousands and hundreds of millions of hours have we spent patting down grandmothers and five-year-old kids at an airport looking for bombs, and they can't find them? You know how come? Because grandmothers and five-year-old kids don't bomb buildings. Terrorists.
You want to hear something, though?
Go for it.
In Waseca, Minnesota, which is a population of about 1,500, mm-hmm. they found a kid last week who had a storage, you know, like where you store things, like when you're moving or something?
Right.
Like you rent a store with over, like, megatons of dynamite and chemicals to blow up the school. And then they found a plot for him. they found handwritten notes that he was going to blow up the middle school and high school.
Yes.
And they found the storage with all the proper chemicals and stuff that he was going to use.
Well, that's because on the internet he can find out all that stuff, and he has shows every 20 seconds showing him how to blow up. I mean, you look at any show, 24, you know, the Blacklist, and on and on. And I'm not saying you shouldn't watch these shows, but I'm just saying Breaking Bad. You look at these storylines, and they're showing you know, how to make meth, how to build a bomb, how to take down, and everything's like, you know, the prototypical script is like, terrorist is going to blow up the United States or Washington or, you know, kill 500 people in a building. And it's every episode. I just turn on the TV tonight, I'm sure. You know, just watching the next movie for Spider-Man.
Even like
X-Men.
Those crime shows have those thematic elements. And, you know, I was going to say two things. I don't walk around in fear ever anymore, especially since I live in the frozen north. I don't spend 1 minute of my week thinking about a terrorist plot, except for when I watch the anniversary of the Boston Marathon. But
right.
Somebody like Colonel William P. Gale, who created the Posse Comitatus and some Aryan Nation movements, and he also started a civil rights protection thing in the mountains of California, which was kind of like a freelance California Rangers. I mean, I wouldn't say he had terrorist roots, but he had a agenda. Let's say he created a paramilitary group. That's what it was. He had an agenda to defend the rights as he saw it. So whether people think that they're within or outside the law, you know, there are scary groups out there, whether they carry a gun or they don't.
They do. I would lean this way, though, and that is, that's part of the price of a free society. And by that I mean, do we want Nazi Germany? Do we want everyone to turn in their guns? Do we want the government to tell you
yes.
what to think? And now I'm not defending what these.
Not all, but I do think some people have excessive guns.
Some people we need to keep an eye on, no doubt about it. There's some, you know, people that are freaks. And they're dangerous. No, I get that. But the problem, you know, what we're running into is like we're going to exchange our freedom for security. So let the government take control, and they'll tell me what's right. Now, I'll give you something for example. What if the government tomorrow says, you know what, the Bible is kind of racist. You know, it's not really favorable towards women. Women's rights. It doesn't really promote homosexuality and sexual freedom, and you know, even if you take out the gay issue, take out the whole thing of people living together, living in sin, quote unquote, and it's just not a tolerant book, and it's dangerous. We're going to outlaw it, and there you know you say well, in America, it's happened in other countries all the time. There's a country, I'm trying to think of it, just this week they brought in Sharia law, you know, like the total extreme Muslim enforcement. And in a country that's 30% Christian, you know, what's going to happen to those people when jihad breaks out? So I'm willing to give a little freedom for people who are bigots, people who are racist, people who have quirks that I don't agree with. Do I think it's right? With their beliefs? No. But I'm talking in a person's private...
Two prime examples are Duck Dynasty Guy and Miley Cyrus.
You know, in their private little rooms, they can be the freaks that they are. Whoever. However, you can be the freak that you are. Because here's the thing is, do you want, like, do you want someone to go to your computer right now and spew everything that you've been on, everything that you've written in your diary, everything that you've said in confidentially to a coworker about your boss or a lover you've talked about, someone that you had a grudge with? Do you want someone like, hey, I'm going to TMZ and sell you out? No, I don't want...
Yeah,
leads,
we only have 6.5 minutes left, so let's talk about... Do you even know the name of the girlfriend?
Yeah, it's Vanessa or V. That's her middle name.
Well, she's rather pretty. She's half black, half Mexican, or something like that. She is rather pretty, but she had this pink visor on. It was kind of like a low scoop visor. It's with a windshield type, you know, like a clear material. And guess what? It sold out on Amazon within one day. I mean, who wants to emulate her? She's not smart. All she did is whistle blow on somebody. She might be pretty, but she's certainly not smart.
She's pretty kind of in a she-male kind of way. I mean, you know, kind of like a pretty-looking guy, kind of like. I mean, there's something a little quirky about her look, and that's not coming from me. That's just if you read any comments that people are posting on her, it's she's kind of got that tranny kind of look going on for her. But regardless, she's better looking than me, and she's obviously made a lot more money. I mean, a couple million-dollar house or place, three or four cars, and who knows what else, just for being a personal assistant.
I'm sure
Please.
She was more than that. Well, the fact of the matter is now she kind of did it to herself, because now she's going to find out what the dark side of fame is. They were trampling her yard while she was trying to walk her dog. So,
yes.
You know, she's going to lose her privacy. So I hope she thought about that when she blew the whistle.
Well, that's the thing, is people are outraged about Donald Sterling. I get that. I mean, I understand the outrage, but here's the thing. We're outraged because, how come? Because people have rights, because minorities and black people have rights and freedoms. And, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, you know, there was segregation. And, you know, maybe 60, 70 years ago, you couldn't have, you know, black athletes going to white hotels. And, you know, and people frowned on it, or you couldn't have a black man kiss a white woman on TV. Or in a movie, or if you did, there was going to be an outrage. And the reason how come we don't we're moving past that is because we have our rights, our civil rights, our liberties by the Constitution. So now here's an example: a minority woman basically violates a white male violates his personal rights, exposing his views on his racist views on, you know, minority equality. So we're outraged about his views, but we're not outraged about his rights. And the reason I say this is paramount is because some of us face racism every day, some don't, but everyone has personal rights issues that are at stake with the government, monitoring what you say, what you do, getting you on health insurance, forcing you to. What if they start saying, you know, to be on our health care, you need to be on
these
drugs?
Well, I think there was more, you know, she was the bottom side of a booty call. She probably didn't feel very powerful in that relationship. And I do think part of her is sincere. But now she's exposed, too, and she's going to have to... We technically only have 90 live seconds left, but we have about 3 to 4 minutes
right.
that we can keep talking, so I'm just going to finish my statement, and then we'll go to our conclusions. I think, you know, this kind of ties in even with Lionel's article on William P. Gale that, you know, there's always a bunch of hype surrounding any type of tension, and I've seen movies where they show the book depository and JFK's killed, and they're legitimate movies. But, you know, I mean, in relationship to that compared to this young girl who nobody even really knows, she came out of nowhere, it's just one thing could create a media wave nowadays, especially with Twitter and instant media, and the celebrities themselves can create their own PR chaos. Straight from their Twitter account. So life has changed quite a bit in America.
And yet, isn't it funny when we want to open the records on JFK, we just want to see what was written, what was stated. It's like, well, it's sealed. We can't, you know, divulge this to the American public. Isn't that crazy?
I think that 50-year anniversary,
right?
When he died, they did release some artifacts, like some of Jackie's wardrobe. But they also released some information, but I don't remember what it was. No, I read it 6 months ago. But all the information surrounding his death, is, you're right, some of it's still a secret.
It's still classified. It's still, you know, and half the thing about it is everyone was involved. I mean, everyone knew everyone. Everyone knew Oswald. Everyone knew Jack Ruby. The CIA service knew Castro, knew the communists. It wasn't just like, oh, and the mafia, the mob. All this stuff was all linked together, and all of them served to benefit in some way. So, yeah, I do think that there was something very fishy. Everyone who could tell something about it either died or disappeared or you know, had
right.
their lips sealed. And then the thing about it is, like, you've got all these people running around. You've got JFK on a stretcher. You get them in there, and then it's like suddenly, oh, hey, here's just a bullet on the stretcher. Look at this. We just happened to find it, and it's in pristine shape. You know, it went through two or three people and exited out, but it's in really good shape. And the bullet hole kind of blaring out from the back instead of the front. Yeah, the evidence seems really, really fishy. Even after all these years.
You know, I'm so out of it tonight. Jack, who did Jack Ruby shoot again?
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Duh. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald really did it. But, well, I saw this documentary on YouTube, or maybe it was PBS, where they showed, like, the room that Lee Harvey Oswald was staying in. I don't know, I just... There were some missing pieces that led me to believe that I didn't think Harvey Oswald did it.
You know, they did the timing with an expert marksman, and they couldn't shoot in the number of seconds that it took to do. You know, the thing with the car slows down, right? You're getting shot at, so what you should, like, blast. What you do is they slow down to a stop, like, okay, now we're sitting ducks. you know, maybe they also heard, they saw that his brain had splatted out to the back of the car, and that's why they were stopping so Jackie and the Secret Service guy could get part of his brain and bring it, haul it back in. I don't know.
Ew.
But, yeah, because that's the reason why Jackie was crawling out of there. She was trying to get his brain. It had been blasted out, which, again, goes, why did the brain go to the back of the car? It had, you know, a shot from the front. If he shot from the rear, his brain wouldn't have splattered to the back. Now, I'm not, you know, a mathematician or a rocket scientist. That just seems to make sense to me.
Well, I just remember there was something interesting about Lee Harvey Oswald's past, and I didn't do the research tonight, but let's see. He was a former Marine, I think. Oh,
went
he defected
to Russia.
He defected to the Soviet Union, and then he returned to the United States, and he was initially arrested for the murder of a police officer, J.D. Tippit, who was killed on a Dallas street approximately 45 minutes after JFK was shot. I don't know. Do you think he did it or was involved or not?
Well, I'm sure definitely he was involved. I just think that it was a multiple shoot situation, and he probably did get set up. Just looking, not trying to throw bias or prejudice, just looking as a crime scene, it's like you've got a shot that seems to come from the other area to do the kind of damage it did, and yet there were shots from behind. I mean, obviously, the first shot that kind of went through, and but the thing about it is they've actually tried to duplicate that shot, and they got pretty close to it to go through three exits and entries, but they couldn't get it to descend. The last shot went all the way down in through the leg of the congressman from Texas. So I think it was Connolly, but the point is it technically could be done with the right angles and everything, but to get the shot that blew out his head, it doesn't make sense from the angle that Lee Harvey Oswald was shooting from. And he was connected to everyone. Everyone knew him. You know, the CIA knew him. You know, the Secret Service knew him. The government knew him. The Russians knew him. The Castro knew him.
So he was an easy target?
It's just the perfect
when he
pawn.
Was in fourth grade, he scored 103 on his IQ test.
you know, he was the perfect person to manipulate. And, you know, when they study people's psychology and background and everything, he was just kind of that person that they could use, and he was. And he did go to the – he offered himself to be a double agent, and then the Russians, you know, got tired of him and sent him back, supposedly, allegedly. And so, yeah, he was a perfect pawn, and he claimed that he was. And why did he get whacked? Right in, you know, prison by Jack Ruby, who everyone knew. How did Jack Ruby get that close to him? You know, people wanted him silenced, and it happened.
By the way, he was a socialist by the age of 15. That might have been his downfall. Well,
go ahead. I was going to say that seems to be a common theme.
I have a terrible sore throat tonight, and I'm having really bad time talking. So I think we're going to have to do our conclusion because I'm a dead man walking.
Yes. Well, I would say, you know, tonight, you know, the thing about it is that examine the truth. If something looks fishy, it probably is. Yoder's rule, John Yoder's rule of conspiracy is if there's 10 coincidences or more, it probably isn't a coincidence. And so follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's down Elm Street.
Okay, my thing is you may know someone for 15 years and never know that they rub shoulders with would-be assassins.
Woo.
So if Lionel, if you listen to the archive, why in the hell didn't you tell me that you met RFK and took his picture, or that you met his would-be assassin, or, you know. I mean, these are things a 1960s child needs to know. So with that thought, thank you for joining me, John. We'll be back Wednesday night, most likely at the same time. We'll decide it on our own. And our network is getting a lot more archive and live listens, so thank you for listening. And this is a very hot topic for now and the future. Please protect Obama and our future.
And whatever you do, don't say it into a tape recorder and don't say it over a phone. If you're going to be racist or wacky or try to assassinate someone, whisper it to yourself quietly.
And don't change your last name to Ruby or Emerald.
Yes.
Okay. With that, I'll end the episode, and maybe we'll have some more information on Lee Harvey Oswald and the ragtag band of assassins on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Good night, y'all.
Good
night.
Night.